WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Now it's time to meet the girls who are saving the world before bedtime.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create the perfect little girl. But Professor Utonium accidentally added an extra ingredient to the concoction, Chemical X. Thus, the Powerpuff Girls were born! Using their ultra superpowers, Blossom, Bubbles, and Buttercup have dedicated their lives to fighting crime and the forces of evil!
The Powerpuff Girls, the hit cartoon series on Cartoon Network, has an audience with an unusually broad demographic. A lot of boys and grown men like it for the rock'em sock'em action and gags reminiscent of the old Batman cartoons. Girls and women appreciate the girl power message of the show. Here's a scene from the show. In this episode, the professor, the girl's creator and father figure, has just come home from a date with the suspiciously sweet I'm a Good Lady.
Wake up, girls. I have a surprise for you.
Excited to be helping out around here with you girls.
Helping out? What?
Well, girls.
Why don't you let me explain to them?
Oh, okay. Sure.
Alone.
I'm at your command, Ima.
Oh, you. You see, it's quite simple, girls. With the professor being as busy as he is, it'll be good to have a female touch helping out around here.
But we don't need any extra help around here. We're the Powerpuff Girls!
And it is that kind of attitude that is going to change around here!
Uh-oh, something is amiss. Or maybe even soon, a missus the next morning.
Come on, girls! Townville's in trouble!
And just where do you think you're going?
We're going to fight crime! That's what we do!
Duh!
My guest, Craig McCracken, is the creator of the Powerpuff Girls. The show originally premiered on Cartoon Network as a featured short by an up-and-coming animator. McCracken admits that the initial idea for the girls had little to do with girl power.
Basically, it was a student film of mine that I was doing at the California Institute of the Arts, which is they have an animation program there. And I have always been a big fan of superheroes, and I just kind of wanted to do a superhero genre film for my second-year student film. And I had happened to draw this drawing of these three little girls, and I just liked that initial contrast of, like, these cute little innocent-looking things but being really tough and really strong. And just by the nature of the contrast, they seem even tougher and stronger. So it kind of just it just stemmed from that initial idea of that student film, and then, you know, I just thought it was a fun, cool idea.
Were they initially called the Powerpuff Girls?
No, they were initially called the Whoop-Ass Girls, which, you know, I like a little better because it just is, it's cleaner of a concept because, you know, the professor used sugar, spice, and everything nice and accidentally dumped a can of Whoop-Ass in, and it just fits a little more with that whole kind of theme, but, you know, for obvious reasons, we had to change it to Powerpuff.
And we all have Whoop-Ass lying around our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Well, he does.
Now, you worked at Hanna-Barbera out of college mm-hmm. as an art director, and you pitched them the idea. Mm-hmm. What'd you call it, and how did you describe it? How did the pitch go?
Well, basically, I had the second-year student film, and I just heard that Hanna-Barbera was looking for new shows. And so I just took them my film and said, okay, this is what I want to make. This is the show. So I just played them the tape and told them, you know, the initial story. And they said, this is great. We need to do something with this. We don't know what, but we have to do something.
Hanna-Barbera did test Powerpuff Girls with kids. How did it go over?
Well, when we made the first short, at the time, like, Cartoon Network and Hanna-Barbera were pretty psyched on the show. They thought this was going to be the first one out of the gate to go to series, and it was like the number one, at least in the executives' minds. And, you know, I went to this focus group with 11-year-old boys, and I was in this room with all the presidents and the big shots and the suits at Hanna-Barbera, and they played it, and the boys absolutely panned it. They just said it was the worst thing they'd ever seen in their life, and one kid stood up and said, you know, whoever made this cartoon should be fired. And so I'm in there with the president of Hanna-Barbera and just, like, totally crushed and destroyed. I had no idea, like, it would have that venomous of a reaction. I knew they might not like it, but I didn't think they'd despise it. So it was pretty interesting, and it kind of made Cartoon Network and Hanna-Barbera think twice about, like, oh, maybe this isn't the right one to launch our original programming with.
Well, how did it ever get made after that?
Well, over the years, a lot of viewer response kept just people calling in going, why aren't you making this show? You know, why aren't you producing this as a series? You know, you've got this great thing here and you should do something with it.
Let's talk about the look of the Powerpuff mm-hmm. Girls. They've right. got these perfectly round heads and no right. fingers.
Right.
Explain that.
Basically because when I drew them, the first drawing of them was really tiny. I drew them really small. And so when I was drawing them, you know, I didn't want to get too much detail into it. And I just drew this little kind of graphic shape of this little girl. And it did something to me. I mean, it worked. And I didn't want to mess with it. And I, as I would draw them over and over, I'd go, okay, let me put fingers on because obviously I'm going to need them. But it didn't look right. There was something that just wasn't working with it.
Now, there are obvious references to Batman. The mayor in the Powerpuff Girls calls the girls to help fight crime, not on a red phone, but on a preschool one with a face on it that I remember right. from my childhood.
Yeah, and definitely the mayor's office is actually a complete swipe from the mayor's office from Commissioner Gordon's. Like basically video printed it out and gave it to our BG guys and go, this is where his office is. And it's a subtle reference that most people might not pick up on, but it's the same room. I hope we don't get sued by 20th Century, but, you know, I just kind of did that as an homage. Because the thing that I really loved about that show, you know, it was probably my favorite show when I was a kid, and I was watching it with total seriousness. It was real. Whatever was happening to those characters was serious. And my parents were watching it and completely laughing, and I used to get really upset with them because I thought they were laughing at me because they thought I was watching a dumb show. But when I watched it when I was older, I realized the whole thing was a joke. And that was kind of a major source of inspiration for me, trying to find, wanting to make a program that can work twice in a person's life on two completely different levels. But it's the exact same program. So where there's subtle, more ironic adult jokes kind of sprinkled in there that kids might not be picking up on. But there's also this kind of base of just good action and fun entertainment that, you know, kids can enjoy.
The plot usually deals with something that little girls really do get motivated mm. by. For instance, standing up to a rich princess spoiled brat or dealing right. with your divorced dad's new girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
That's an episode called Mommy Fearist.
Yeah.
Or being afraid of the bugs.
Yeah.
In an episode called Insect Inside. And in that episode, the villain is this masterminding roach. How do you come up with the storylines?
Basically, what we do is you just sit back and you go, okay, what did we do as a kid? What were things that affected us? And how would I have dealt with that situation if I had superpowers? And if you ground it in reality like that, it really helps, I think, make the audience relate to what's happening. And a lot of it is like, okay, classic thing, kids being afraid of the dark. Well, what if the villain was actually the boogeyman and he was this disco guy who wanted to block out the sun so he could party all night? And so you basically just start with something, a foundation that's based in reality, and then add the concept of superhero-ness on top of it.
When you were a kid, did you spend a lot of time thinking about what you'd do if you were a superhero?
Yeah,
being
pretty
a superhero?
Much. Yeah, my mother made me like capes, and I would basically wear it every single day. I had a black cape with an SC on it for Super Craig, and I kind of wore that every single day of my life. You know, I just liked it. I don't know why. I wanted to be a superhero, I guess.
There are a bunch of evil characters in the cartoon, mm-hmm. a whole cadre of them. Right. My favorite, and I think most people's favorite, is Mojo Jojo.
Yeah.
The name, you know, it's just brilliant.
Thanks.
He's some kind of warped, mad scientist monkey in a mm-hmm. turban with a very strange pseudo-Eastern European Arab accent and a penchant for redundancy, as mm-hmm. his name would suggest. We happen to have a Cartoon Network commercial featuring Mojo Jojo. It spoofs a popular network TV show. Let's listen to it.
You do have one lifeline left, Mojo Jojo. Would you like to use it?
Mojo must think about this. Or if I use this lifeline that is my last, then I will have no more lifelines. And that will mean that in the future, when I might want to use this lifeline, then it will no longer be available to me, as I would already have used it now when you asked me if I wanted to choose to use a lifeline.
Perhaps someone you'd like to call.
Call? Yes, coal. I could call someone on the telephone, and it would ring at their house, and they would pick it up, and then I would ask them the answer to this question that I am thinking about and unable to answer on my own, despite my superior intellect and desire to...
Where did Mojo Jojo come from, creatively speaking?
Basically, I'm always a big fan of monkeys in general, so monkeys are always good in any form of entertainment, wherever you put them. But he was basically... just I wanted to have a catch-all evil villain that could be their main nemesis, who could either be kind of goofy, kind of silly, or really evil if need be. And he was just a drawing I did in college of this evil monkey with this glass dome over his head to protect his brain. And the initial concept of Mojo is that mentally he's like three steps above man, you know, humans, but physically, he's three steps below them. So he's still kept down on the evolutionary chain, but he's frustrated because he's much more, you know, far mentally advanced than any people are. So he hates the human race, and especially the Powerpuff Girls, and he's always just trying to destroy them. And he's just like a good classic arch-villain evil guy. And his dialogue is basically like an homage to Speed Racer, where, you know, a lot of that dialogue was done because there were so many mouth shapes in the old Japanese cartoon. They just had to keep talking when they were dubbing it in English. And so they just had to keep, you know, reiterating the same thing over and over again because the mouth was still moving. And it kind of accidentally became this really amazingly funny kind of thing. You know, the Speed Racer cartoons are some of the funniest cartoons unintentionally that I've ever watched. And so I kind of wanted to do that with a character because, you know, most villains usually always declare their evil plan beforehand, and I just thought it would be funny if he just kept doing it and kept declaring it. And as far as his accent is concerned, I don't know if it's any kind of ethnic stereotype specifically. I've read things where it is Middle Eastern or it's Japanese, but we never said do that. We just said do this dark, menacing voice. And the voice actor who we were auditioning came up with this, and it was like, oh, that's him.
My guest is Craig McCracken, creator of the Cartoon Network series The Powerpuff Girls. We'll be back with more after the break. This is Fresh Air. Back with animator Craig McCracken. He's the creator of The Powerpuff Girls, the hit cartoon series on Cartoon Network. I'm curious how much of the animation is drawn by hand and how much by computer in The Powerpuff Girls.
All of it's drawn by hand. None of it is drawn by computer. It's all still traditional cell animation. We do the storyboards and all the preparatory work here in the States, all the boards, all the models, all the sheets, all the backgrounds. We send the blueprints over to Korea, and they animate it by hand, and it's all shot on, you know, on film. It's classic traditional animation. And even if you're using a computer, you still have to draw it. There's still a guy sitting there drawing what's going on. There's this misconception that there's this magic computer that you push the make cartoon button and cartoons come out, but it doesn't exist.
More than half of the audience share for Powerpuff Girls are boys,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, what do you think the appeal is? The violence?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm not sure what cartoons they were watching when they were growing up, but when I was growing up and I watched the Super Friends, the superheroes never fought the villains. You know, they would like catch the Joker and tie him up and throw him in jail, if that. I mean, because there was rules about violence and stuff, and so there was never any conflict between good and evil. And I think the boys are really responding to the fact that, hey, look, there's bad guys being bad, and here's the good guys coming in and actually being good guys and saving the day. And there's some visceral action that they can pick up on. You know, I think they like that.
When did you start drawing?
I was about 3. I started drawing... probably my first drawings were Mickey Mouse, Batman, Superman, things like that. You know, I've always been obsessed with the, you know, graphic image. My mother used to tell me that when I was about, you know, 2 or 3, I used to just stare at drawings of Mickey Mouse and just I couldn't take my eye off it. You know, just because it was I just liked the image of it for some reason.
Your mom was an art teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Did she teach you to draw?
No, not at all. My mom, was basically a housewife for the early part of my life. And then my father passed away when I was 7, and she kind of had always wanted to be an artist. And so later in her life, after my father passed, she decided to pursue it and became got her master's in art. And so, now she's a teacher. When I was growing up, she wasn't, but she kind of had, she was always an artist. She just never had an opportunity to really explore it.
So your dad died when you were seven. What mm-hmm. did he die of?
An aneurysm of the heart.
So it was sudden?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you, I mean, seven is pretty old. You must have pretty strong memories of coping with that experience.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's probably the main thing that really pushed my artisticness a lot, because I kind of just turned inward and decided to just start drawing. Because a lot of what I did is, when I couldn't draw something, I would have an image in my mind and I couldn't draw it the way I wanted it. I would go to my dad, and he had studied architecture and was an engineer, so he could draw fairly well. And so I would kind of direct him and go, okay, I want this drawing of Batman, Superman, and Shazam. I've never seen that image in any of these books that I have. I need to see that image. Can you draw that? And then I would tell him what I wanted him doing. Because, you know, the way my hand was doing it, it wasn't matching what I could see in my head. And so when my dad passed, there was really nobody else to do that but me. So I had to kind of force myself to draw even better so I could get the images that I had in my head out. And I kind of, you know, that's when I really, really got into just, you know, drawing at full speed.
I've seen plenty of articles theorizing about the feminine and the post-feminine message of the mm-hmm. Powerpuff Girls. And I'm sure the irony isn't lost on you that that there is all of this philosophy about this show and about girl power. And it's a show made by you, a guy who mm-hmm. just loved thought these little girls were really cute when they were fighting.
Right.
Does it make you, I don't know, do you feel a little bit weird when you come across these theses on the show?
Somewhat. When people are saying it's intentional, like it was all pre-planned, it is a little strange, because it's not. It's just kind of happened that way. I don't know if subconsciously the reason it's happened is because I was raised by my mother, so I'm used to strong female role models growing up, or, you know, I don't know where it comes from. But if you look at the show, all the female characters in the show are pretty positive, and all the males are basically idiots. And it was never intentional. It just kind of happened that way. You know, where Miss Bellum is really smart and intelligent and helps the girls out. Their teacher, Miss Keene, is the same way. But all the villains are male, and most of them, and they're fools. And the professor's really kind of strange. And the mayor is obviously a complete idiot. And I don't know how that happened. It just kind of, it happened that way. And it was never pre-planned. It just was an accident.
Now, did my eyes deceive me, or do I see in the episode Mommy Fearist about the professor going out on a date with a real hot, I'm a good lady, that's her name, woman, that they're stuffing condoms in his pocket as they're helping him to get ready?
Well, you never see them. You just see Buttercup's hand in his pocket and, you know...
And she says some of these.
Some of these. So they could be handy wipes. They could be condoms. You know, who knows? They could be breath mints for, you know, all anyone knows. It's kind of left up to your imagination. Whatever you think it is probably what it is.
To have fun, do you throw in little risque numbers like that?
If it works with the story and it kind of doesn't get in the way of the narrative we're trying to tell, yeah, we'll put it in there if we find it funny. We don't try to do it intentionally, like, oh, we have to have something, you know, to put sneaky to put in this episode. It's never something that, you know, we have to do for sure. If it happens and it works, then we'll leave it in.
Craig McCracken, thanks so much for talking today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Craig McCracken is the creator of the Powerpuff Girls. The Emmy-nominated show airs weeknights at 8:30 on Cartoon Network.